Delve, a Transmasculine podcast. I'm Jackal.
And I'm Kai. We're your hosts for the Transmasculine podcast. Our show continues to focus on the stories of people who identify as transmasculine and who transitioned either socially or medically before or around the year 2000. We will continue to make efforts to include stories from trans men of color and acknowledge the importance of representation from these voices.
The name of our show highlights two important facts: that one, for our generation, we were often told to hide our past and live an underground existence. And that due to that, our stories are very often overlooked.
We want our audience to know that we ourselves are a part of this generation of transmasculine identified people, and that we value the experiences inside our transmasculine community. We want people to know that throughout our lives, each of us has had to navigate issues of disclosure, which have impacted us in many ways.
As humans, we are always changing and transitioning. As elder trans men, we assume many roles. We get married and divorced. We are caretakers, we are parents, we are professionals, academics, and advocates. We push for human rights and systemic change. We are exploring the various transitions that we undergo post-transition.
If you're new to our show, welcome. And if you're a listener from a previous season, thank you for your continued support. You can find us on most social media platforms, including YouTube. These are trying times, and we want to acknowledge that here in the States, and throughout the world, there are groups trying to remove protections in place for our trans and non-binary communities. Safety is a real concern for us, particularly our trans and non-binary BIPOC siblings. We offer links to health and safety resources on our website, transmasculinepodcast.com. Please hold each other dear and stay in touch with us.
We invite our listeners to remember that we are a living community. We are healthy. We are contributing. We have experienced loss and success. We are loved. And we welcome you to our stories. We want to give a content warning for this episode. There is talk about mental health issues.
Remember, you can go to our website, transmasculinepodcast.com, for resources for crisis lines, including the Trevor Project, Trans Lifeline, and Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Transmasculinepodcast.com.
Hi there. I'm Mike, and I'm the creator of Trans Mess Stories. When I was at the start of my transition, I searched for uplifting stories of people who had questioned their gender identity, gone through their transition, and come out stronger. I needed direction and a light at the end of the tunnel. Trans Mess Stories is my way of paying it forward. It's the resource I wish I'd had, a space full of real, positive, and anonymous transition stories from transmasculine individuals, offering clarity and hope for anyone navigating their journey. If you're on the transmasculine spectrum, I'd love for you to share your story. And if you know someone who could use some direction, send them over to transmaskstories.com to explore dozens of transition stories. All right, that's all. Enjoy the show now. Cheers.
So, Jackal, it's now 2025. We're at the end of January as we're talking, but it won't come out till later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's January, and I had a snow day. I'm here in Colorado. The temperature dropped to below the negatives, which Fahrenheit is really cold, really cold. So we got a work from home day, and it was Monday, the 20th of January. So instead of going into work and being busy at work, I watched the inauguration all day long.
Oh,
yeah. And I know it felt like torture, and other people were like, why would you do that to yourself? But I have to say, Kai, I felt obligated on behalf of undocumented people, birthright citizens who have undocumented parents, mm-hmm. trans women, non-binary people, trans and non-binary youth, I felt obligated mm-hmm. to watch what was said out of the, and I'll say horse's mouth, and we'll just mm-hmm. say the horse that is now president. Mm-hmm. but yeah, so I did that, and it did make me realize that I will have to mediate my media intake, like how much news I'm watching in this regard, because I'm going to have to take time to avoid and just live my life mm-hmm. rather than immerse myself and be constantly feeling nauseous about stuff. But I also realized that even if I am avoiding, it's ambient energy and it's all around us all the time. And I'm getting full of it to the point of implosion. And I need to be able to vent. I need to be able to talk about it. I need to be able to self-care. But some of that self-care is avoidance and ignoring. And some of that self-care is venting and talking. So that's where I'm at with this era right now, let's say, and my self-care. What about you? What have you been feeling?
I think since the inauguration, when we knew that he was going to serve a second term, I made a decision to limit my access to media. So I do read headlines, I keep informed, but I don't get sucked into the whirlwind most of the time. That's like a big cesspool. And I don't listen to clips of him speaking or anything like that. I do work with young people, I work with folks who were born here, whose parents are undocumented, and I work with lots of youth of color. So I definitely am surrounded by folks and our own communities who are really nervous. And I think part of self-care is meeting with you and our guests and continuing normal. The importance of this, being around my chosen family, just I've been very much outdoorsy. I've been like getting out and moving my body to try to, that helps my mood quite a bit. I've been trying to just all around take care of my health, but part of my mental health is improving because I'm consuming less media. Particularly, we got off Twitter. We're no longer on Twitter, our podcast.
It just feels so ill with so much of it that's happening to our government, basically.
And I also just want to say we were in talk with folks in Vancouver, BC, and they're considering coming down for Camp Last Boys in the fall. But I've had them express concerns about crossing the border as a trans
Totally.
person. Oh, and I don't know what's going to happen. We can't know what's going to happen. And what I'll say about self-care is one of the things that I enjoy about news stories or just like keeping informed is analysis and what things mean or what the implications can be. And that also can really stress me out, because you have a lot of people just guessing. And one thing that we've learned is that there's chaos that happens, particularly at the beginning of this administration. I think I'm just trying to keep a measured approach to consumption and just not, we can't know, but I'm definitely aware that we are on the radar and so are other folks. But
I mean, I just want to tell people to take care out there. Like, I know that I work at a, you too, right? I work at a school, I work at a college. We get federal dollars. And some of the things that have been said about needing to turn in names of various groups of people for various reasons and finding out what the policies are at your institutions, right? That's very important for our safety. I've got two different meetings going on as a Spanish speaker. I have a group for the Hispanic students at my school to talk about their feelings, their fears. I also have a group called that I call Spectrum. A shout out to our back in the day, but also because it's really appropriate, right? Because it's not just for trans kids, but like non-binary is on that spectrum too now, right? And so we met once last semester and we're meeting again next week. Because I wanted to check in with these kids about how they're feeling. Like, some of them have approached me individually and been like, one, been like, thank you for organizing this group because, yeah, I have this and that. But a couple of them have just started hormones. I'm concerned for them and their healthcare and what that means if we have when we didn't have healthcare back when we were doing it, but we found ways to get the testosterone. So, are we back to that? How can we support and help these youth? But like things like that. So just self-care, reaching out,
Keep in contact
community.
with us, y'all. Just keep in contact. Let us know how you're doing, and we will keep showing up. And we're happy to be here. We are so thankful for our guests. If you're interested in being a mentor or a mentee, go to our website, transmasculinepodcast.com, and sign up if you want to connect with folks. One last shout out to Camp Lost Boys. They have
Please.
different resources, and they actually have the Intentional Man Project, theintentionalmanproject.org. The event on the intentionalmanproject.org was The Power of Presence, Conversation on Black Trans Masculine Historical Figures and Perspectives. And thanks to the Intentional Man Project and the hosts for helping us keep informed and talking to us about our trans siblings of color.
Yeah, totally. And also, we're excited to go to Camp Lost Boys.
Exactly. Yeah. Same. Thanks, Jekyll.
Thanks, Kyle.
Dave is a 50-year-old gay trans man who started identifying as openly queer in 1994 and as a trans man in 2001. He started his medical transition in early 2002 in Portland, Oregon, with a few other littermates, but after moving multiple times, lost that sense of connection and community with other trans men. In 2018, he joined Instagram, hoping to find connections with other older trans men, and found inspiration, albeit virtually, to seek out more for himself. After being on HRT for 17 years, he finally had top surgery in 2019. Even so, he suffered from crippling depression and alcoholism. After hitting the proverbial rock bottom, Dave made the choice to live in 2020. Sober ever since, Dave is now happily married and lives in his native Northeast Ohio. Dave works as an artist and gig worker and is unapologetically codependent with their dog, Ruby. Dave's transiversary is 2001, the same as John and Stefan. So go check out our website to see what momentous events happened in that year.
Welcome back to Stealth, the Transmasculine Podcast. We're here with Dave. How you doing today, Dave?
Super great. Thanks for having me.
Dave, we usually start by saying how we know each other or how you got on the podcast. I don't personally know you. I don't think you know Kai. So tell us how you got to be on our podcast.
The magic of Instagram, I guess, would be the connection there. I think either I followed you or you all followed me. And then I've heard other people recommend, just independently recommend your podcast to me. And I was following your page, but never actually listened to the podcast. Until kind of recently, which is a little bit embarrassing, but I have a certain amount of hesitance sometimes because I never know who's selling what, and people's motives aren't always as altruistic as I'd like to think. You said you're in your fifth year, so it takes more than two or three episodes of these things to be taken seriously. And so I applaud your effort to keep it going and to be bringing in plenty of folks that I feel really honored to be listed on a page with. Thank you.
That's really sweet. Thank you so much.
That's very sweet. And I think I messaged you and was like, hey, happy transiversary, because you mentioned something about your transiversary. And then you were kind enough to agree to talk with me because we don't know each other. And you're right. It's really important for us to size each other up and make sure we're all a good fit. So thank you for being here, Dave. Okay. In terms of trans masculine identities, how did you first learn about them, Dave?
So the prequel, because I thought about this, would be when I was in college, and so this would be like 1995, six, maybe earlier, maybe 94. I came out as queer, and there was a queer student union. So I tried to be a little active in there. It was very small. It wasn't very impressive, but it was all we had. And there was a person who was female born who came in one day and announced that they were a man. And I thought, that's absurd. Like, that, you can't just do that. And because my understanding of trans people at that time was there are only trans women, trans men don't exist, because it was very penis centric. And so the logic of biology that, oh, you can take something off, but you can't put something on, that's where my brain was still stuck at that point. So that's the first spark of understanding that there was a person in the world that identified as a trans male person. That being said, internally, I had always identified as a male person. So I just, the language, as so many other people share, the language wasn't there, but the concept was there. But my internalized transphobia dictated that whatever this other person was saying was just crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. That's weird. I had all of the worst reactions. Then a couple of years later, and that was it. And then that person just disappeared. And when I say that, I don't mean in a scary way, but they weren't involved in the queer student union anymore. I didn't have any involvement with them. There was a trans woman who was part of some of the art circles, but other than that, just no exposure in real life, and there wasn't internet. And then I read Stone Butch Blues, which kind of ruined me for a little bit, I'll be honest with you, because that was not the experience that I saw for myself. And I was under the impression that it was a lot more real and like autobiographical than maybe it really was. So I just went right back in the closet because I didn't want to have anything to do with any of that. Fast forward to 2001, I graduated from college, moved out to Portland, Oregon, and was hanging out with some people who watched a documentary called You Don't Know Dick. And that's what got me. That's where I was like, wait a minute, there are people like this. I'm one of those people. All I have to do is do this and this, and hey, I can live out my life the way I want to. And that was when I was like 26. There was a lot of breeding time for the idea to like sink in. And I gotta say that I really fought hard against it. I didn't want to be a woman. It wasn't that I was trying to hold on to my female identity in any kind of way, because I didn't identify as female. That's a whole other thing. There's a lot of things that I don't identify as, but figuring out what that spark was still uncomfortable, but suddenly, and that documentary had Lauren Cameron, had, I want to say, Jameson Greene, and
Max
one of
Valerio.
Max Valerio.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. Because I put it out of my head until I was getting ready to talk to you guys, and I looked it up and I'm like, oh, okay, there it is. So that's long answer to your short question, but that's what made me realize, hey, wait, like I can actually do this. This is real.
Yeah, that's amazing. You make me wonder about when we run into people who unwittingly spark something in us. Like you met this person who said, "Hey, I'm a man," at a meeting, and I wonder if, like, Jack, have you ever thought about that? Where was I that person for someone?
Wow, Kai, that's a really deep question. I have not thought about that. Like, I know my person who was like, I had a very similar reaction to Dave. It's, oh, you can't do that. That's not okay. And Dave, too, like, I knew trans women existed, but going the other way was just not an option. And then when it was an option, it was like, how dare you? Like, how dare you do this before me, maybe? Like, all of those kind of envy things. Then it took me a few years to like get there. And that was definitely through the help of the group that we were part of. But as far as me being that person, wow, Kai, that's a deep question. If I am, I have no idea. If I am, I have no idea. Like, I am the person who then went their own way, and that person later transitioned on their own. You? Do you know if you
I
would
don't
be?
know. I just know there were a few people that, some of your story reminds me, Dave, of a couple of key people throughout the years who popped in, who really caught my attention, who were trans masc in some ways. And so when we get emails from folks or messages from folks who talk about the importance of this show and how relatable our stories are, I can finally hear my voice, or it brings me back to a certain time. That is remarkable. So thank you so much. You're also highlighting the discomfort that we feel, whether that's internalized transphobia or homophobia or just fear of how the world works. Is this a possibility? It's 2001. You're thinking, yes, I'm going to move forward. Talk to us about how that rolled out. How did you begin your transition, whatever that means to you?
I was really lucky to be fast-tracked in a way, considering the state of affairs in 2001, because I was in Portland, Oregon, and the details I can't remember, but I got set up with basically just like a list of things that you had to do to get stuff done. So the first thing was to, obviously, I wanted to get on testosterone, so I had to go to a therapy. I had to have a letter from a therapist to be able to bring to a doctor, and I was fast tracked through that, got a bargain bin. I've never made enough money to be considered more than lower income. So I was eligible to basically get a $20 per session social worker who was licensed to be able to write the letter. The first session with her, she was like, if I could write your letter now, I would. I can't. We've got 12 sessions together because that's what you have to do. Let's talk about anything you want to talk about. That was good therapy and got my letter. Took the letter to the free clinic. This was not through insurance. She was a real doctor, but she wasn't in a medical practice per se. And it was the same clinic for the folks with HIV and the folks who were unhoused and all of us trans folks. Sat on a bench, waited my turn, and saw the doctor, got waved through. She wrote my prescription, took it to the pharmacy up the road that to this day I still get my prescription from. I'll do a little advertisement for New Era Pharmacy in Oregon. And I know a lot of people, they do bulk, so that works out real well. I pay out of pocket, always have. So I got fast tracked through that. Now, that all being said, surgery was a totally different ball game.
Was that all through Portland? You were in Portland, Oregon at the time?
At the beginning. So the first, I'd say 4 or 5 years of my transition were all out there. There might be people in the audience there who had the same experience where Dr. Becker was the trans woman doctor at the clinic, and she had the worst bedside manner, but she was fantastic. And she was like gruff and a little rough around the edges, but totally took me and a bunch of other people under her wing and was like, let's just get you on this shit. Let's just get you all doped up, send you on your way. Let's get this machine going. And that's not to say that I didn't feel like I got good medical care, but we didn't get hung up on the details. She made me do blood work. She made me do the basic stuff. But then we were just, it was the Wild West. Just go off to the pharmacy, get your shots. You do it yourself. You figure it out in your bathroom. Off you go. But I appreciate that. It's one of those, you can't step in the same river twice. That's just the time that's just gone. And we'll never get it back. And for better or for worse, I'm glad that that's an issue about gatekeeping that we can get into later. But it was gatekeeping, but the most lack of gatekeeping you could have in 2000.
Thank you so much. Okay, I interrupted your surgery story. Go ahead, please.
Oh, not so much of a story. Just I didn't have access to. I don't want to make excuses. I didn't feel compelled internally, like I didn't have the self-esteem, frankly, to really pursue getting top surgery until it was absolutely critical, well into my 40s. I spent 17, 18 years medically transitioned, but still not taking my top off. And so that was, I feel like it's something that some people can identify with, but I felt really, and still feel a little bit alone about because there's such a, in a good way, there's this timeline, this chronology, this logical, you do this and this, and then you're trans step-by-step process. And so I had done what I thought was enough to make me be trans enough, but without top surgery, I felt like I wasn't trans enough. And then to be an aging trans person, and to be 15, 16, 17 years into being trans and fully identifying that way and not having it be something private, but then still not be able to publicly take off my shirt or engage in, and again, this is just me personally, but I couldn't engage in any kind of personal romantic relationships without having the body that I wanted. So by default, I identified as asexual for a little bit, but that didn't really land well because I'm not asexual. That wasn't a good fit. But I think that in the end all be all, as difficult as that was to walk around in the wrong body, but with the right mind for 17 years, it taught me a lot about tolerance and body positivity, and what body positivity really means, and what we can talk ourselves into accepting, and what we need to then ask for help for.
I have my own story about getting top surgery and why I had to do that. Part of it was legal. I couldn't get my passport until I got surgery, and bottom surgery was definitely out of the question, out of reach. So the gender affirming surgery that they would accept was also top surgery, but I didn't really want it at the time. Like, I was really small breasted. I didn't really care. I had a lot of nipple sensitivity that was sexually charged. And so I had a lot of mixed feelings about it, but I had to do it if I wanted to travel out of the country. Why did you not want top surgery? Was it financial? Was it physical? What were your reasons?
I'd say 75% financial and 25% just legitimately trying to figure out my way to do it. I knew that it's something that I wanted, but I didn't know if it was something I could do on my own. Meaning, there are interventions, medical interventions that we get all the time, but are they all, what's cosmetic and what isn't? More sort of philosophical type questions that I was asking myself. But there was a period of 5 or 6 years in, where my interest in fitness developed. And I saw guys, here I am in my 40s, but I was seeing guys in their 20s starting testosterone, but not having top surgery, but being able to build up their chest and like basically do like natural, not
Building.
augmentation, but yeah, without surgical intervention to be able to build up your body in a way to be able to pass as male. And I thought to myself, gosh, after 16, 17 years of atrophy, I got these pancakes that are just like hanging off me. There's no reason that I can't maybe try to do something about that. So I committed a lot of time and energy into that, which didn't work, which is okay because it doesn't work for everybody. And that's a huge lesson, I think, to those of us who are over the age of 20, certainly over the age of what I would assume is the bliss of being a young man in a young man's body. And so I'm trying to be a young man in an old man's body. and that wasn't working. So trying to line stuff up a little bit better made a lot of sense. But ultimately, it got super critical. The dysphoria was killing me. I'm a waiter by trade mostly, and I remember standing at a table, and people just instinctively are rude. We know that, and that's fine. It's something I'm used to.
Especially in
But
the
this one
service
table,
industry.
yeah, exactly. It's great because it makes me really, I don't know, strong and callous to a lot of other things. But these folks were they just wouldn't stop looking at my chest. And I knew that I was binding badly because I always made my own binders and just tried to make do. And I was uncomfortable and hunched over, and they just wouldn't stop looking at my chest. And I'm a 42-year-old man, 43-year-old man, and I burst into tears in public, way in the middle of my job. Basically, had a nervous breakdown and excused myself and pulled my shit together. But it was not long after that I made the phone call to a surgeon up in Cleveland who did fantastic work, and we got that all taken care of. Now, I will say that it was still private pay. I've never had insurance to cover anything transgender related. And that was done incrementally and with a lot of difficulty, but we got it done. I'm glad I waited because I think that the results that I got are fantastic. And so, in the end all be all, that's my story, and I'm happy to have it. But I know that there are some dark days.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. We have heard from folks and Jacqueline, I know folks that have opted to not have surgery or can't have surgery for a variety of reasons. And I really appreciate that your thoughtfulness about what was a deal breaker for you. And that sense of dysphoria you're describing, really, I can feel it. And just the sight, people judging us and checking us out and wondering about us in public spaces, and you're just trying to do your job. It's so uncomfortable. Thank you for sharing that. Dave, when you talked earlier, you mentioned almost like a prescribed path, like I was doing it the way that I was told or something. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that? What do you remember back then? You're in Portland. What were some of the messages that you heard about how you should live your life as a trans guy?
It was prescribed pretty strictly, frankly. And this is just my experience, but it was like grades, like first grade, second grade, third grade. I was perpetually stuck in kindergarten, but first grade would be when people get their prescription for testosterone and they can go out and they start passing and their voice drops and there would be littermates. But then I think the expectation was certainly at that time, in order to afford surgery, you had fundraisers. And so it was my role to go to everybody else's fundraisers and spend a lot of money at the door and on booze and on unhealthy behaviors that adversely affected me, but I wanted to make sure that they all knew that I was supporting the community. Again, I want to make sure I take responsibility for my own behavior. I never graduated to the grade where I could then have my own fundraiser. So I think that there was just that prescribed, you do this, you get your top surgery. And bottom surgery has always been a little bit more of a mystery. I'm not a candidate for it. I do not suffer from lower dysphoria. When I say it's a non-issue, that's not because of anything other than just that's my body and I'm thankfully like one less thing for me to worry about. And I think folks, at least back in those days and still today, talk a little bit less about lower surgeries. So I don't know what the prescribed trajectory would have been for that chapter in people's lives. But it was definitely very based on top surgery. And then once the top surgery was done, then people just disappeared off the face of the earth. And as somebody who was always not graduating to the next step, it gave me a really sour taste about the community. I want to stay positive because I don't want to sound negative, but you're asking about that time. And that's something that really sticks out in my head in terms of remembering how I felt, which was, hey, this is great, but there are all these drawbacks. And it was very mixed. And I try to not see my experience through today's lens, but I really wonder sometimes if I would ever use a term like trans joy back then, or like some of these newer terms that can be really empowering. I don't know if I really experienced. That was the feeling, at least at the time, was people do their thing and then they, and that's why what you're doing is really important. The whole idea of people getting to this graduated point where they become stealth and then they disappear. And then when we want to connect with each other, we can't because we've all gone stealth. And I was seeing that in real time. where I wanted to stay connected to a community, but they kept disappearing on me. And then new people would rise up and be the new star, the new young buck, who then we would all have to come out and support because they're the new star and they get their top surgery. And it was 4 or 5 years of the same thing. And so I moved. That was my only solution, was obviously that wasn't the community for me. And so I left.
Wow, I just have to say, like, that it feels heartbreaking in my soul. Like, Kai and I talk so much now about how our podcast is really focused on and how we really want people to focus on connection. And that whole message of you are talking about it, but not talking about it in this way of that you are supposed to disappear, like you're supposed to do your transition, you're supposed to get to a point of passing, and then you're supposed to fall off the face of the planet and not keep connected with community, not stay connected. So it's just a heartbreaking story for me. And I just want to acknowledge that was hard at that time. And I think it was hard for a lot of us.
And to answer one of your first questions about how we know each other, that's what brought me to Instagram in the first place, was this, where are all the trans men? Like, they gotta be out there. I know they're out there. Because I knew them 20 years ago, where'd they all go? And it still took 2 or 3 years to start forming what I believe are close enough to in real life connections that they mean something, and they're close enough to in real life connections that they get me over that hump to make the in real life connections. I consider this what we're doing right now in real life connection. I've been inspired by Rocco and the Intentional Man Project to do more in real life type stuff. I've heard other folks on your podcast say, yeah, the best thing we can do is just pick a time and a place to just get together, have coffee, let's meet. And if nobody shows up, but if one person shows up, I started a local group with a couple of fellas that I do know either in real life or just close enough to real life that we'll be able to start something in Northeast Ohio to get folks together so we can have multi-generational kind of conversations and talk about all the stuff that we all know is not just lost history, but important to reflect on.
Hey, Dave. So one of our questions is, how do you think your social standings impacted your ability to transition, whether that be your fears or your ability? I know you talked a little bit about not having health insurance, but what about other things, religion, class, race?
Without boring you too much with my recent family fallout, I think the most biggest impediment and the struggle would be not so much caring what other people think about me, but caring about what other people think about the people who supposedly care about me, if that makes sense. So let me backtrack. For instance, the worst thing I could do is embarrass my family, right?
Okay.
So it was communicated to me at a, before anything trans or queer or anything came out. Just being weird, just having an interest in something that they deemed weird. Now, let's make this clear. All of this is very dysfunctional and abnormal, but anything out of that definition of good was deemed weird and therefore not okay. Was basically existing in two simultaneous lanes where we got a middle class household where, by the looks of things, had everything you could want with a little bit more. Still got to go to summer camp a couple years, still played the violin. Had certain perks, but the ability to branch out beyond what was expected was that wasn't there. So I knew that, like, the first thing that happened after I came out to my family was, how could you do this to us? What are we going to tell people? So yeah,
This
so my
isn't about
biggest
you.
And when I mentioned going to therapy to get my letter in the first place to get testosterone, that's all we talked about is that I said, I'd rather just disappear on my family. I'd rather just do this on my own, cut off all ties, because they're going to disown me anyway. And she was like, how do you know? And I said, trust me, I know. She's, but how do you know? And we spent the time in therapy talking about that. And she helped me realize that, oh, no, it is important to at least give them a chance. Give them a chance to disown me before I make that decision for them. Fast forward, what, 20, however many years later, and it still played out the way I thought it was going to. I put a lot of work in to basically placate and excuse them for their poor behavior, but it got to a crisis point where your love is not worth this, and because their love is warped. So, again, long answer to your short question, but I was raised essentially in a progressive Jewish household where theoretically gay people were okay, theoretically people of other races and other religions and other backgrounds. Oh yeah, we're very, I call it Sesame Street anti-racism. It's very palpable and accessible, and it's the right thing to say. But when it comes down to what people actually feel, it's very different. And so that internalized really heavily with me, and is only recently, now that I'm finally getting my shit together, is starting to dissipate a little bit. But it takes a lot of unlearning because nobody else can teach you those lessons.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that, Kai.
Yeah. When I think back to that time and being in therapy, the therapist I had didn't talk too much about my own experience as I moved forward, post notifying everybody and post like getting the prescription and what life would be like as I adjusted. How do I disclose to my family? Some of us wrote letters, some of us told them in person, some of us didn't tell anyone. I just think that's such an important and individual choice, and that sense of shame and guilt that comes within, even if it's an implied message, implicit message within families, that I can really relate to. How could you bring shame on the family, even though you're trying to be who you are and it should be celebrated, but it's like, oh, I really shouldn't be doing that, and I got to be quiet about it.
Right.
Oh,
So,
absolutely.
which brings us to our next couple of questions. Our show is called Stealth. What does stealth mean to you?
For me, it means probably something different than I think about it for other people. So for me, stealth would be being anonymously not just being clocked or read as trans. I feel like I'm much more visible as gay, so that doesn't bother me. Stealth to me, it should be a voluntary state, right? I would like to define stealth as something that you have control over in terms of disclosure. There's the implied notion that stealth, we're pretending to be somebody else, so that's where it gets a little bit complicated. As far when I say for me as opposed to other people, stealth, when I hear that somebody else is stealth, I automatically just make sure that we apply all the rules and considerations that we discussed earlier, then you don't want to publicly out them. So it's a lot less complicated to hear that, oh, person A is stealth. But yeah, if I'm describing my own relationship to stealthiness, I have a dangerously flirtatious relationship with disclosure. So I'll disclose when I want, and I'll disclose when I have to. Every time I disclose, I know it's not going to be the last time. But I'm very possessive over my identity, and I don't want, so stealth to me would be don't out me unless you have my permission.
Yeah, I love that. I'm very possessive over my own identity. Like, I think that applies to so many of us, if not 100% all of us. So I appreciate you saying that. Have there been times in your own life when you have led a low to no disclosing life, like maybe because family pressure or anything like that? And has that shifted over time?
Sure. I think before, I was not really active on the internet or social media before Instagram in like 2018. So between 2004-ish, 5-ish, and 2018, almost 10, 15 years, I went without knowingly speaking to any other trans people. Yes, working in the service industry, I just find myself, changing jobs couple times a year often. So usually I would be stealth for 6 months. Something would happen around the 6 month mark where somebody would say something. I think actually, Kai, maybe in your interview, you told a story that was the exact same story where a coworker made a comment and you tried to call them out on it and say, hey, that's not okay. And then that sort of snowballed me into outing myself somehow, by saying, hey, you don't realize that what you're saying is offensive to me, and this is why. You didn't realize and then you can fill in the blank. I'm gay, or I'm trans, or I'm a feminist, or I'm Jewish, or whatever it might happen to be that the person would say that it was offensive. That being said, I don't think there wasn't anything that ever came up that would out me unless it was in like a medical situation. So until Caitlyn Jenner was on the Time cover, and like until, I don't know what, and people refer to 2014, 15 as this new age of trans awareness. I don't have a pinpoint year, but there was a good decade plus where it just didn't come up. So I was living stealthy because it wasn't something that I needed to talk about. And yet, the lack of having it be a topic is what then drove me to want to find that community again. I'm going, this isn't fun to not have. I want to talk about this stuff, and there's nobody to talk about it to.
I'm
And
so
that's what I
glad you're
find.
talking to us about
Yeah, me too. And
it.
that kind of leads into the question that we have about like how have you persisted throughout the years? Because there's been times where you were more visible than others, and then now you have a really nice social media presence. And if and we'll pitch your Instagram, but like how the hell did you decide to do that?
I just got inspired by other people. As somebody who fancies himself pretty worldly, there is a lot that I didn't know. I didn't realize that there were lots of opportunities for happiness and fulfillment and joy that were really not that far out of reach. And my alcoholism was absolutely an impediment. When you asked me about barriers, I hadn't specifically said that, but let's make that real clear. Alcoholism is a huge barrier to a lot of things. That was a struggle. I'm coming up on my 5-year sober anniversary, but up until 2020, that was always a constant battle, taking up a lot of my time and energy. But no, Instagram really just typing in, just doing searches and like how the algorithms work, it's fascinating because it would show me so much I didn't want to see. But every time I found something I did want to see, it really did open up these rabbit holes. And ultimately, I got connected with a page that was run by this fellow in Australia. It was like a binder. I wanted like a binder full of trans men. And it wasn't a collaborative page because it was just him doing it. But he invited trans men from around the world to just send a picture, a bio, like quick little blurb about themselves as a way of just like seeing each other, finding out what your hobbies are, how old are you, how long have you been on T, all the basic questions. But he stopped doing that. And during 2020, I offered to take it over for him. That was not an option for him. So I started my own page, which I then handed off onto somebody else who's doing a much better job with it. But I think that impulse to seek out people who have similar, I love finding folks who I find a lot of alignment with, but then I love finding folks that I would never know in real life. And then here they are on Instagram. I'm like, that's awesome. People on boats in New Zealand and people in the Arctic and Antarctic and on ships. It's just amazing.
That's great. I want to say how nice it is to see images of you as a trans guy, as a queer trans guy. Representation is so important. So I love seeing your images, and that's why I messaged you. I think that's important. So much is happening in the world that our connection is just more and more important, more vital to our survival. And are you connected, or how connected are you up in your region now? You said you're starting maybe some sort of intergenerational or cross-generational group. Well connected are you currently?
Slightly, I guess, would be the qualifying term. I know one fella in real life who, again, I know him in real life through Instagram ultimately, because I was lucky enough to go to Camp Lost Boys last summer. And that's something I can't say enough great things about. And so that connected me locally with at least one fella that we've connected in real life since, just once, but we tried. And it's hard these days to just have the mental capacity to entertain. But yeah, we threw around the idea. And again, it's nothing that I haven't heard other people do, just these little groups around the country, such and such social clubs, such and such coffee groups, such and such lunch and brunch, where people can just show up, hopefully, and connect. And I will say that I feel it's important to reiterate what I feel like I'm this disciple of Rocco and the Intentional Man Project, but having intended spaces for trans men is so important. And so my focus, and this is, I think, where when you ask about connectivity to the region, I live in a really great place in that there's no shortage for resources. However, specifically for queer folks of all stripes and spots and colors. That being said, intentional spaces for trans men don't exist. And the ones that kind of do, I appreciate them wanting to open up the definition of masculinity and to make it a trans mask spectrum type event. I'm not comfortable going to those events, and I would like to hold events selfishly for people like me who are looking for a similar experience where we don't need to introduce with pronouns and we don't need to, we are sensitive to all the things that normal, good, men are sensitive to, and we create hopefully a culture full of good, positive male vibes. But there's no reason that anybody coming hopefully is uncomfortable with their own maleness. And if being a man is not where they are, that's it. This is just not going to be the space for you. And like I said, I think that's okay. And that took me a while with my back to the Instagram presence. That's been a struggle there because I'm not a gatekeeper. I don't want to be in charge of saying your identity is okay and yours isn't and all of that nonsense. It's been nothing but internal fighting. I don't want any part of it, but I also feel like it's okay for me to ask for what I want. We've been told everything from sexual health to dental cleanings, everything. Ask for what you want. You need to be able to express what you need and hold other people accountable for providing what can be expected. I'm not a leader. I'm a rabble rouser. I'm the guy who go out and cause trouble, but I'm not the one to organize the event. But in this case, I'm going to try and we'll see how it works. I'm on firing on a lot of different cylinders, but
No,
that's the goal.
you're fine. But it reminds me of something that Kai says pretty often is that when we have been, especially when we've transitioned later in life, like you were pretty young in your 20s, but Kai and I were both in our 30s and being socialized female. And even if we don't identify or didn't identify any part of our lives as female, we were still socialized female. And that connection between not asking for something, not asking for what we need, not asking for space, not taking up space is a big thing that has impacted our community. And I do think that Rocco, the Intentional Man Project, Camp Lost Boys, being unapologetically trans man is hugely important. It's something that is countering this cultural message that our community has carried and is healing from. So I appreciate everything that you said.
I've noticed anecdotally online, I've seen zero stickers, memes, or whatever, 'cause that uplift trans men. And don't get me wrong, I love my trans women, but it's nothing but to protect trans women, protect trans kids, but trans men still don't exist. It's unfathomable. It's something I really can't wrap my mind around. I get really angry. And so then I figure, what can I do with that anger? And that propels me to try to do things that I'm uncomfortable with, which is starting a group or going outside of my comfort zone, because that is infuriating. I don't understand why trans female groups, especially, who might have a certain amount of power, can't you just put up a meme every once in a while that says trans men are men? I know that's a thing that people do, but I don't get the sense that we're being supported within. Not just within the trans male community, but the larger trans community just doesn't, especially with all this keep men out of women's sports, we're even more invisible than ever. And it's amazing. Amazingly bad, don't get me wrong, but it's something.
And if I may just, when you were describing your path along transition, you were in Portland, which, being someone who lives right next to Portland, I know there's so many of us everywhere. And there was lots of resources, and then you moved. You weren't dating. You had surgery. You are. No longer, you asexual is not a fit for you. You've managed issues of disclosure a lot, and you've shifted jobs, and you're like, here you are in your current day. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you manage disclosure now? There's been different things going on, and you're in a region that is a very critical region, part of the world that's very swingy, right? So I just want to check in with you about like how
Are
you
you a
manage.
swinger?
How you manage that in your area, in your with all the different things that intersectionalities that it bring you to who you are now.
Sure. First, I do want to happily report that I am blissfully married and have been for over 2 years to a wonderful man. And we met online. We're an OkCupid success story. He's yay. I know it actually works for some folks. So I dated a little bit to address what you asked. Disclosure dating online is real interesting. It's just a lot of hunting, peck, and experimenting what works and doesn't work. I think that as far as disclosure, I started to follow the model of what we were just talking about, with which is take up space, be unapologetic. On the one hand, I toyed with having it on my dating profile and then not having it, and a bunch of different things. And I finally landed on just if I get beyond sup, with somebody, then the conversation can start, and then I'll disclose, I'll approach it as it comes. So my current philosophy as far as disclosure is just if it comes up, if it doesn't. And I'm more than happy to go out physically and protest and say, hey, I'm visibly trans, I'm here to be outside the state house or whatever. But honestly, I don't really see the point in any of that right now because we have other things to concentrate on. But disclosure is, it's less tempting, I think, than it used to be. I used to feel like it was important to disclose to the plumber or the bus driver. I randomly disclosed, I was up for.
I'm your waiter, and excuse me, but I'm a trans man. Thank you. Leave a
Oh,
bigger tip. There,
totally. where that might be, like I've said that I told you the story about sitting at a coffee shop and somebody had to protect trans kids or something like that, and I said, "So much for wearing that. I was one." And it's friendly. It's a friendly person, right? Up to the plumber. But I think there's a certain pressure point that I experience around disclosure when I like have a relationship with someone or I'm working, whether it's professional or personal. And I feel like, okay, now I have to figure out when my in is. So like, when, how the hell do we do it and when?
I hate the win. I hate the win in. Oh my God, I
So
hate
like,
that
when's a
moment.
good time, right? When's a good opportunity? Because, oh, I had an opportunity there, here, whatever. I was talking about sports and no, I didn't play baseball. I played softball where there's trans fats in here. Speaking of trans. So anyway, I just you're thank you so much. It's just something.
Now every time somebody brings up trans fat, I'm gonna have to say that I'm a trans person.
Trans
Speaking of
fats are
trans
good
fat,
fats.
trans fats are good fats, and so are trans people, and I'm one.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh
Thank you
God.
very much, Juggle. Just I should just get a card printed up and I hand it to people.
Oh my God. That should be our new thank you card to people.
I can go to the grocery store and just stand in the oil aisle by the
There
butter. I'll stand by the butter.
Oh my
Let's talk
God.
about
All
trans
right.
fats.
Okay, this is off topic. Okay. Hey,
Okay.
Dave, this is your interview. What do you want to say?
Oh gosh. I made a list. I was like, if there's a lapse, should I have a to go to list? And no, I really, I think in general, I just think it's so great that we're finally, hopefully, getting to a point where we can see true diversity in our community. Because I think that we've had, in good faith effort, we've wanted to make sure that on the face of things, we're a diverse community. But I'm finally seeing with programs like yourselves and projects and that people are doing, our stories matter more than what our faces look like. And it's just so interesting to see somebody who looks like me, but their story is totally different. And this cookie cutter version of what a trans man is, hopefully each and every day gets battered just a little bit further so that we can erupt and emerge as individual people. Because this, I don't, I'm be preaching to the choir, obviously, with your audience, but it's really disheartening to have this throwback. And yet, it's interesting to live like the 90s. I'm having this very visceral throwback to the sensation of living under a government that hates us, in a system that doesn't acknowledge us, in the larger society when having a sticker on your car is more dangerous than it was a few months ago. When I first put a pride sticker on my car, it was a big deal. And now still having one, it seems like a big deal all over again. And it's a generation later. But here we are. I guess we try to live by example.
I appreciate that a lot. So we're nearing the end of this part of our interview. So, Dave, what would you like to say to newer trans and non-binary folk?
Oh, I would maybe just touch on kind of what I just said, which is we've been here before, and I really relied on the information coming from the experts in the field, the legal folks and the folks who understand what in essence is actually happening as opposed to the hype. I want to reiterate advice that I heard somebody else give, which is don't believe everything. I just saw the other day a very nice young man put up a picture of a passport and a birth certificate that had been shredded and mailed back to him. And he's like, this is what's happening to trans people. And I'm like, hang on. Yes, there's reason to be scared, but let's just don't believe everything you read, guys. Like,
Don't believe the hype.
don't believe the hype. For all we know, that's a Russian fucking bot planting these images in our own community to twist us up even further. Do your own research. Follow the ACLU. If you have $20 a year, pay to have your civil rights protected. Read resource material that is verified. Don't get your news from your neighbors. Don't get your news from Instagram. And I'm the first one to like see something on Instagram and say, oh my God. But when I do cross-checking, sometimes it's real, but most of the time it isn't. And know your sources and know who the true leaders are. I think that's something I appreciate that you say I have a big an Instagram following. In the large scheme of things, it's just a blip. Influence. The folks who are really dangerous right now are the ones who are expressing their concern, but giving out the worst advice. Like, you can't give out advice about IDs. We have 50 states. Stop. Stop giving out advice to each other. Stop telling each other, because we have this issue with medical advice. Don't listen to your friends for medical advice. Go to your doctor. People went to school to get the right answer to these questions. There's some trust that we have. And I hear myself say this, and I feel like, oh, okay, boomer. But
No, so this balance, staying informed, like looking at a broad array of information and making your own informed decision. Even if it's in preparation for a doctor's visit, you have some knowledge beforehand. Some of that is anecdotal from folks. And then you go in and talk to your doctor and figure it out as
absolutely.
best you can. So I think there is a balance there, and staying connected to folks and being present for folks and not giving out advice is actually really smart.
My friend gave me this funny image for my head, and that was two people fencing, and one was staying informed, and the other one was staying sane. I really appreciate the don't doom scroll advice. Like, Kai and I are all about not doom scrolling. We're trying to stay trans positive, express trans joy. We're here. We've always been here. No matter what comes at us, we will continue to be here. We're not going anywhere.
And that's the message. That's the message. And I do at least see a lot of that is that we're not going, we've always been here, we're not going anywhere. But I think that's a lot easier to say than to really genuinely practice.
Feel
You can
right.
believe it, but to practice it. And it means you have to be present, whatever that looks like.
So, last question. What do you think we should have asked that we didn't?
Oh. That's not fair.
Well, I mean, if there, I mean, we're just trying to give you.
No, I know. Yeah, no, that's a really good question. Again, I'm looking at my little list. I'm like, is there something that I wanted to mention? I think that just as a total aside, there's 10 things I could say, but I will say this just because I feel like it's an undersaid thing. When it comes to lower surgery and lower parts for male people, I think there's a lot of whether it's shame or just not talking about it, but it's okay to not want a penis. And I feel like penis and maleness for me have never been the same. And I don't know if that is for everybody, but when I've tried to express that to other trans folks, I feel like I get a little bit of pushback without anybody directly saying, but being a man is all about having a dick. And nobody says that, but the implication is that really it is. So I just want to throw that out there for anybody, because it took me a really long time to I knew that I didn't want lower surgery, but it took me a long time to understand that what I did have was cool, functional, not like great. And that's if there is one other person out there who hears that and they can develop some kind of body positivity and positive relationship with themselves in that way, and hopefully then go on to have a intimate relationship with another person that's meaningful, then I've done my job.
Awesome. I think body dysmorphia is different for all of us, and not all of us have lower body part body dysmorphia. And I appreciate you saying that and letting everybody else know that it's not required to have lower body dysmorphia to be a trans man. And as Kai mentioned, there are so many reasons that people don't get different types of surgery. Lower surgery means you might have lower body dysmorphia and not have access to it. Hang in there, try to get your mind right about just being with your body. But we, Kai and I, love you no matter where you're at on that spectrum. And we thank you so much, Dave, for all of your insights with us today.
Hey, Kai here. Jackal and I are excited to offer a new members section on our webpage. As a member, You'll get ad-free episodes with bonus material like Trans Masculine History. Here's a teaser.
Let's get started with famed African-American gospel singer Willmer Brodnax, the frontman for his own quartet called Little Axe and the Golden Echoes. I should here mention that Little Axe was his nickname. He was a small guy, especially compared to his brother William, who went by the nickname Big Axe.
Go to our website and sign up to become a member today.
So what'd you think about Dave?
Wow, what a bright light, actually. I really enjoyed how his conversation flowed and how upbeat he was and just how he thinks about things. How about you, Jekyll?
I just thought he was a cutie. Like, you describe it as like positive energy. And I just think, yeah, but I just think his... Does it sound really dismissive to say cute energy? He was just sweet. He was a sweetheart. Yeah,
really sweet. And I think he's really thoughtful too about
how
he went about things. I really respected his ability to make decisions about his body and his level of disclosure. Whether it, back in the old days, if one had health insurance, it's any kind of gender-affirming surgery was not covered. And so it wasn't an option for us. Like, lower surgeries, some of us didn't even think about it as an option because it was way cost prohibitive. But
just, not only that, but it was like destroying your body. Like, there was no functional...
Different era, different technology and advancement in medical science. Yes, yes. So it wasn't quite at where it is now. And I think for him, part of it was intentional and part of it wasn't, to make decisions about his chest. And then the dysphoria that he described that led him to really make the move to take steps to get surgery, but that was a long time in, and what that was like. And I really appreciated his life seemed to open up more and more with time. And he went from being in an insular place in Portland to moving out of Portland where he didn't feel the vibe. And then he went home and made a lot of changes to his life, including surgical intervention and then dating and eventually marrying.
Yeah, he had a really, to me, a classic story of that. What do you do? What message are you told? With the whole living stealth and not having community, like, that really struck me. And I know it struck you as well, right? That it's like the hidden message. Like, it doesn't have to be verbal. Right? It's just what we're seeing every single time. So we know that's what's going to happen. And that's what's going to happen to us. And so it's you transition and you fall off the map. It just feels like at some point you lose community and you lose the ability to find community because we've all fallen off the map. I don't know, like, he made me happy again in this podcast. Like, for us doing this, it's like, he made me remember why we wanted to do it in the first place. And that is really it. If you've fallen off the map and you want to get back on the map, get in touch with us. Like, we love you. And we're like, you're so important to our collective story.
Exactly. I know that he was describing really well that it's almost like a sense of isolation and people not acknowledging or even expressing care or interest in our history. And so I am very much interested in it as well as you are. Yeah. And one thing I will say, excuse me, that really stuck out to me was the work that he's done around himself and his mental health and how he wants to exist in the world. And the discussion about coming out to his family and what that would mean, anticipating that, just that pain that some of us experience. Yeah. And I don't know if I even know how you told your family or if I remember how you told your family. Like, I wrote a letter and it's such a hard, hard time. And even if somebody isn't explicit in saying, absolutely, we disown you, you have to do this on our terms. You're really violating a family norm here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we usually shift to like a joyful tone because I think we have been here before. Our relationships can change over. Yeah. But just like that, as he continues to live on his terms, his joy is increasing. And I just think that came across. That's that, I don't know if cuteness is the right word, but like, I just think he's a delight. And I wish him.
I like that word, delight. I do. I think he was a delight. I'm so happy that you reached out to him. I'm so happy he said yes.
Same. So, Dave, keep going on your path, connect with other trans men, take up the space.
Take up space.
Take up the space and just keep being the badass dude that you are. Stay in touch with
Yeah.
us.
And a cutie patootie.
Now it's time for Transponder.
Today's Trans Joy segment is a shout out to Dr. Sean Dees and his Trans Joy workshop series, a process workshop series for trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming folks. It's time to make joy the center of your life. You deserve it. Yes, you. Check out his website at seandees.com/transjoy. That's seandees.com/transjoy. Congratulations on his fall workshops that were sold out from October to November, and on his new series this spring, which begins today, March 30th, and runs till May. Congratulations, Sean Dees, and thank you for all you do for our community. If you have trans joy that you would like us to share on our Instagram, please contact our Instagram page at transmasculinepodcast. We enjoy your comments and look forward to hearing from you. Lastly, this show would be nothing without our guests, who share their insight, expertise, and heartfelt stories. We absolutely adore you and are forever grateful to you.
Good job today, Jackal.
Good job to you, Kai.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Stealth tries to capture stories of those who transitioned before the year 2000. We recognize that language has its limitations. The words we use to describe ourselves and our community evolve over time and will not represent everyone's experience. We also want you to know that the health and well-being of our community is our number one priority.
In fact, we want to give a shout out to parents who are supporting their gender non-conforming kids. Supporting your child in the development and expression of their identity is not child abuse. We support you and love you for supporting your kids. We fully anticipate that people and groups will express positivity and negativity in response to our stories. We're prepared to deal with this and, as you know, thrilled to be one small part of our community.
We offer links to health and safety resources on our website. We monitor our social media platforms. We respond to feedback from our audience, and we will be accountable when we screw up.
We want you to know that we are just two guys doing this in our spare time. We are getting better, but we are still rookies and still two old farts to boot. So we ask that you still be patient with us as we learn the ropes and find our way. The opinions expressed on our podcast are our own and those of our guests. We do not represent any outside entity.
Remember, if you're interested in sharing your story, we would love to hear from you. If you're interested in volunteering, please let us know. Your feedback and support are essential to our show's success. Help us get the word out about our podcast. Tell your friends, share on social media, and rate us on your favorite streaming platform. You can find us on Instagram, Transmasculine Podcast, on X, formerly Twitter, at Podcast Stealth, on YouTube, Stealth, the Transmasculine Podcast, and be sure to check out our website, transmasculinepodcast.com.
Thank you for joining us. Until next time.